enjoy a good squeeze.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Margot.
And I'm August.
And this is A Good Squeeze.
The show where we squeeze a little bit of that James Bond into our everyday lives.
That's right. Today we're doing it once again, normal but different. We have a special guest.
That is correct. This gentleman needs no introduction amongst the Bond community, but hey, we're doing it anyway. He's the OG of the Bond podcasting. He's
a godfather, one might say.
A writer of not one but two, count them, two books, where it's chronicling what it means to be James Bond, titled Being James Bond. Hey, we have Mr. Being James Bond himself, Joe Darlington. Joe, thank you for being on the show.
Guys, thank you so much for having me on the show again. I really have been looking forward to this for quite a while. So, August and Margot, thank you so much for having me.
We have been looking forward to this tenfold. How you're feeling, 100%. It is such an honor to have you on. Thank you so much for taking the time, gracing us with your presence. We have quite the topic to unpack today. I think this is something that's very unique to you and August, very much. Not you and August as a duo, you period and August as well. This is going to be a very nostalgic heavy episode, because we are going to be discussing movie theater memories.
007
movie theater memories. And as the novice, I'm going to be sitting back and listening to you guys chat. But yeah.
Yeah. Marco comes in later in the catalog of James Bond in the cinema. Yeah. for sure. No, I'm excited to unpack this, memories and different topics of seeing James Bond in that movie theater setting. But real quick, a different setting that I have to bring up is when we met you, Joe. It was last year at the Being James Bond event. We got to attend your soft book launch. It was your 1.5, volume 1.5 of Being James Bond. And I did a reading and signing autographs, and it was a really cool time.
Proper event.
It was proper. Yeah. But we got to chat in there, and it was really great meeting you. But I have to thank you for something else. Every year, as a book reader, I say in quoted fingers, I always make like the resolution, I'm going to read 12 books this year, and I never do it. But this year, here we are sitting in June. I've read 7 books, and one of which is thanks to you. I read volume 1.5 of Being James Bond. Finally.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah. I tell you, you know, first off, it was great meeting you guys at the book launch. It was so much fun. You know, that whole day was terrific. Again, it's fun. There's every once in a while you get to enjoy being, you know, a big fish in a small pond, which is a little fun. So yeah, that day really was terrific. And you said it was fantastic to finally meet you guys, because I'd heard your podcast. I've heard other people talking about your podcast as well. So it was great to finally meet up, and it was like, oh, that's them. Okay, cool. So yeah, it was a great time, and it was great to meet you guys.
That's really nice.
Feeling is very much mutual. Yeah. So thank you for, and also good, thank you for taking the time to do this. We're just gonna be like, thank you. All good. Here we go.
All good. But I feel like you were gonna tell me how great the book was, and I cut you off. So if you want to,
yeah.
I will say that opening. Let me juice you up. That opening couple like no, not a couple pages, but that opening chapter. You talking about your journey through Switzerland? Like, hey, I'm gonna make that damn jump. Yeah, like puckering ensued while reading it. Like I felt like I was there.
Nice.
It made me want to have my own adventure in that way. I'm afraid of heights, horribly so. I am not a thrill seeker, but reading that chapter was like, damn, I need to create an adventure of my own, because not that we frequent Switzerland, but Margo's from there, and we go every now and then. I'm like, maybe next time. Maybe next time's the time to do the jump.
Yeah, sure. So I haven't read the book or anything, but because I don't know how to read yet. But with August, it can be, him and I do have a very difficult time finishing books. That's no lie. He breezed through your book, as in, like, it was so captivating. I could tell, like, it, I mean, within how many days did you finish it?
Like four or five.
Four or five, which for us is a short period of time. Nice. Not because it's like, oh, a simple read. It's a captivating read. And he was telling me about everything that was that you had written in the book and the way that you were writing it. And there's something so wonderful about being able to be so open about, like, these are the things that lead you to do all these wonderful things and all these endeavors, and the emotional and psychological, not, I don't want to say emotional, but the psychological reasoning behind it is something that I feel like a lot of people need to hear, need to read, and need to have as a point of reference for their life. And it's so cool that you've been able to provide that, one, for August and for all your other readers. I think that's just absolutely incredible. And your voice just comes through so well. And just the way he was describing it. Yeah, clearly it's a very good read and highly recommend it beyond the Bond fan. It's something that can apply to anyone who wants to just, like, get up and get out of the house and do something. you know?
Oh, cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Honestly, that is honestly one of the nicest compliments I could get about it, because that's exactly what I was sort of hoping for. And it's funny, I always sort of keep an ear out when people tell me that they've read the book. I'm always listening to see, like, did you read it all the way, like, really from beginning to end? Because I always think, like, it's such a hodgepodge of different things, and different people will respond to each of the chapters differently. So I would assume, you know, I feel like they'll probably read the beginning, and then they'll sort of hop around throughout the book, you know, maybe they'll read it all the way through, maybe not, you know. I wouldn't take it personally if they didn't, you know, because again, certain things are going to appeal to different people. So it's very nice to hear you guys talk about it, and that you read it just all the way through, and that's great. So thank you so much, honestly. One of the nicest compliments I could get.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're not here to talk about books. We're not here to talk about podcasts, although, you know, of course.
Sounds like we're not here to talk about your book, okay, Joe? Like, yeah. Sorry, no.
Quite right.
Not here to talk about podcasts either, but although, yeah, of course, love being James Bond, and Reviews Without Remorse, of course, two podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We're talking movie theater memories. So just to kick it off, do you have any early memories of seeing James Bond in the movie theater? What was the first time you walked into the cinema and saw that 007 guy?
Yes, I do. Yes. And I feel like it's, at this point, you know, I feel like it's one of those things I talk about so often that everybody must know what my first movie going experience is, but I'll say it again, you know, freshly. My first movie going experience with James Bond was Octopussy, and we're talking, I would have been 13 years old at the time, and it was back in the days where me and a buddy wanted to go see it. So his mother would drop us off at the theater, and then my mother would pick us up afterwards. That's how long ago we're talking. So yeah. And it was interesting because that was, you know, I was just starting to see the James Bond films on TV. For Your Eyes Only was on cable ad nauseum at that point. So I was watching that one like crazy. So, yeah, as soon as I knew the new one was coming out, I said, oh, I got to go see this. I got to, you know, see it in the theater. And yeah, I did. We went to see it, and I remember feeling like I have no idea what I just saw, but it was cool. All the action beats were cool. I knew it was cool because, again, you could tell it was political. It was intrigue and stuff going on. Again, I'm 13. I couldn't tell you what it was, but yeah, no, I was kind of hooked from then on out.
Nice. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Octopussy's one that if I were to pick a few that I really want to see that on the big screen and didn't get a chance to, Octopussy is actually one of them. And I think I would, you know, selfishly want it in the setting that, you know, we've got to experience semi-recently some of these gatherals, like seeing Thunderball on the big screen, seeing Quantum of Solace on the big screen, and, you know, Moonraker and whatever's to come. Octopussy's one, because just being in that setting with Bond fans would be cool.
Was your friend a Bond fan?
Not particularly. I mean, I think we were all kind of just sort of movie fans really at that point. I mean, I was, you know, I would say that that time for me was, you know, when you're young, you're just captivated by Star Wars and Superman and all the other stuff, that all the big movies, you know, that would appeal to a younger guy. And Bond was just for me starting to sort of float to the surface. I mean, I don't even know if I would have called myself a hardcore fan back then either. I think I was just kind of like just a regular fan. You know, again, I'm a young guy, so Bond movies are, you know, cool. So that was the takeaway. But I think it was a little while until I really started to acknowledge the fact that I had been becoming like a really hardcore Bond fan. In fact, I will make a confession here that I don't know if I've actually told anybody this. I kind of keep this on the DL.
Here's but a place to keep it on the DL. So
yeah. So this is kind of breaking news, man. And I feel like I might catch a little heat for this, but because I usually just say, "Oh yeah, Octopussy was my first one," and then from then on forward, I actually saw all of them in the theaters. You know, anytime a new Bond film would come out, and you know, and I usually what I'm saying, and I kind of believe it, but then I sort of have to remind myself at some point, "Oh wait, I actually did not see A View to a Kill in the theater." So that kind of breaks my streak, and I kind of feel like it's, you know, again, that's like a confession as I'm saying it. But I did miss that one in the theater. Not for any particular reason. I remember I kept trying to get out to go see it, but I remember like by the time I was able to sort of get out for some reason, plus this was like this, it was a crazy summer for movies. And I remember by the time I got around to it, it was like, I just couldn't find it in the theater. So I was like, oh no, I missed it. Like I just didn't see it. So I didn't see that one until VHS. But after that, I finally picked up, from then on out, I caught every single one at least once in the theater.
You're done for. This is the
totally
end.
Am,
this
right?
is the end for you.
Honestly, yeah, I feel like, oh boy, my cred just went real down.
Oh
far.
Man, you're never gonna recover from this. There's nothing you
no,
can do.
No, this
no,
is,
I'm drunk.
Absolutely
this is
not.
Miss, View to a Kill over here.
Yeah, right.
Listen, I'm a fan, but you know, and it's funny. It usually sits pretty low on my list, but I've had to acknowledge it's a guilty favorite. I really do enjoy the hell out of that one.
Well, honestly, to miss any, if you had to miss any of them on the big screen, I mean, you know, I feel like that one's pretty high up on that list, you know. But that's so interesting.
I would though. I mean, honestly, if they ever do, if like you know, Zariski ever brings it into the theater or anybody, I mean, I would definitely see it, and I'd be very curious to see how the blimp scene kind of holds up on the big screen, because I sort of feel like that's one of those moments where like, all right, that could actually work. You know, I'd be curious to see if it kind of takes life.
It's a spectacle. So it's a spectacle.
Yes.
You know, I'm lining up, you know, you were saying you were 13, we saw Octopussy. So you're probably 15 when A View to a Kill came out. Yeah.
Yes.
So maybe, you know, maybe it wasn't your fault. Maybe you just couldn't get a ride. Right.
Well, that's on it. That's it. I kind of feel like anything before about 17, I'll cut myself a little slack. I mean, you're generally, I'm not kidding when I say getting to the movies was a little tricky. In fact, the friend went to see, the friend that I saw Octopussy with, I mean, we would go to the movies regularly, and he used to give me such a hard time because, you know, he had a small family, so it was just kind of, you know, he had a brother and a sister in it, but it was mostly like you know, his mother would pick us up and drop us off at the theater, but for some reason, whenever my parents came to pick us up, they would both parents, all three siblings, and sometimes even the dog would pile into the car, and my friend would laugh at me, be like, is this like your family's like night out or something, like is it like what is with them? So yeah, it was rough getting to the theater.
Oh yeah, my God.
I can sympathize. I grew up in the woods, very far away from a movie theater. So going to the theater from the time I was born to, you know, probably until I got my own wheels was a, you know, special treat.
And I always say this to listeners and to anyone, when he says I grew up in the woods, whatever you imagine, like picture the woods, that's it. Like it's the woods. It's not
like Hansel
like,
and Gretel. Oh. Did you have to leave like little breadcrumbs to get home again?
It's crazy. Yeah. Like he'll take me to like areas in the, and just a little side note, but like he'll take me to areas where he grew up and we'll be wandering through the woods, and he'll point at something and he'll be like, oh yeah, I put that there when I was 4 years old. I'm like, and it hasn't moved? How does that happen? And then he points and he's like, oh, that's a sandbox my dad built. I'm like, we're like 20 miles from the house you grew up in. How is that here? You know? Anyway, so it's crazy. So it really is isolated, but yeah. You were saying. Sorry. Wow.
So all that to say, I relate to making it difficult to get out to the movies. So you missed View to a Kill. That's okay. By the time Living Daylights comes out, you're 16, 17. You got your wheels.
Yeah.
You made it to Living Daylights.
Yes. So yes, Living Daylights. So now I'm, so not only am I becoming, boy, it's so funny we're doing this because I'm remembering things as we're talking that I kind of completely forgot about. I saw Living Daylights. For some reason, the first night, and you're right, I got my wheels at this point. This was when I had my Camaro. I had a 77 Camaro was my first car. And my friends used to laugh because it was like this kind of, this almost navy blue, and all of the, like, it was old enough that all the shine had sort of come off it. So they used to call it like dead blue. It was like a dead blue colored Camaro, but it was still pretty cool. And I remember for some reason, the first time I saw it, it was me and some friends and somebody was running late. So we actually missed the pre-titles. So I got there right as the titles were going. So I basically got the gist of it. But of course, I had to go back again at least once or twice to see it. I remember, I think it was the third time I went back. I went back the third time to see it. And again, for some reason, I'm running late. So I'm rushing to get there. And again, I think I'm all hot shit in my Camaro anyway. So of course, I'm, you know, getting to the theater, taking the turn, probably skidding, or, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, the car just goes up in the air. I hit something. I'm up in the air. Right as you were turning into the parking lot, there was a big giant curb, like divider, that I didn't even see. And I literally went up in the air and mounted the car on top of the divider. And the divider was wide enough. So it wasn't like the car was going to wobble where the front end or the back end was. It was literally dangling on the car, on the divider. The wheels weren't touching the ground. And I'm just sitting there spinning the tires going, what did I just do? So, oh my God. And it just so happened that there were other like guys that I knew from high school who were just hanging out outside the theater for some reason, who saw this and came running down, and they're cracking up laughing. Everybody's hysterical. And meanwhile, I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Somebody had a pickup truck. So they sort of just came behind me and, you know, just kind of slowly just pushed forward and pushed the car off of the thing. So yeah, I mean, thank God I didn't do any real damage to the car. It was pretty, you know, it took a beating pretty well. So this is a long way to go to say, yeah, I saw the Living Daylights twice in the theater.
You had a Bond moment on your way. That's amazing.
Honestly, right. Seriously. It was crazy. And I remember going there with a friend and they were just like, what is your problem? Like, just calm down. It's a movie. So yeah, I think my fandom was kicking up a little with the high gear at that point.
Yeah, that's why James Bond is escapism. So you get to escape and see the fancy stuff, not try and
exactly.
That's good.
That's bonkers. Wow.
Yeah.
So at this point now, you know, you had your first viewing. Now you had your wheels, and pretty much any excuse to miss a Bond movie is gone. But let's say, you know, you saw the Roger Moore era, the Timothy Dalton era, the Pierce Brosnan, all the way to Daniel Craig. What have you felt, you know, in your experiences, like what has changed the most in seeing Bond in the movie theater, whether it's the hype going in or like the changing of the guard with some of these actors? You've got to experience it a couple times now, just for you personally. what has changed the most from your earliest memory to your most recent?
Well, the big thing that sticks out the most for sure is the difference in back then. You know, I was lucky enough to get into James Bond back in the days when every 2 years you just knew there was a new Bond coming out. Like it was like clockwork. So you just knew that, you know, 2 years from now, I'll be back here watching another James Bond movie. Now, of course, it's a little bit more of a big deal, I suppose, when a new film comes out, because again, I mean, the way they've been recently, it's like we probably waited at minimum like 4 years for this new movie to come out. So, yeah, that was definitely, so the hype back then was different. Like you knew it was coming out, but I mean, and you were excited for it, but it wasn't like, you know, will it or won't it? So yeah, that part was different. And yeah, I mean, and again, back then you still just didn't miss it, but it was funny. It's funny because again, back in the time frame that we're talking now, like I remember seeing, I saw License to Kill. I think I only saw it once, and I saw it in a drive-in. So again, this is kind of like, so now I'm 19 years old. Now me and friends are going to the drive-in, and it's a question of who's hiding in the trunk. It was probably like the, which is probably me. You know, this was probably, there's a movie, there's a drive-in by me that's actually still there, and it's one of the last ones around. So, you know, it's probably a good 40 minutes away, and it's sort of out in the country. But yeah, so that was my experience seeing that one in the theater. And then of course, for 5 years, Crickets, which at the time was the longest wait ever. And it was bizarre because we're talking, you know, GoldenEye comes out in 95. The last one was 89. So between 19 and 25, that's pretty formative time. You know what I mean? Like that's sort of a big deal. And it was to the point where, you know, I can remember in the in-between periods, I remember watching the VHS tapes to death. I remember it was a girlfriend at the time, and her dad used to get a lot of VHS tapes, and he had a copy of The Living Daylights. And anytime I was sort of sitting around bored over there, always popped it in and would just watch the pre-titles to Living Daylights just all the time. So yeah, so I remember like right in 95 when you first started to see those trailers, you know the name, you know the number, and Pierce was finally getting his shot. You were just like, oh my God, James Bond is coming back. Like this was a huge deal. I mean, it was to the point where I think you were even on the fence as to whether or not you were ever going to see a James Bond movie again. So when that came out, it was kind of like, whoa, we're doing this again. And yeah, so that came out, and you better believe I didn't miss that one.
So in between like these 6 years, would you say you went back and like really became like a really strong fan, like it within yourself, going back and watching like all the Connerys and things like that. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I've heard you say in the past that you were a little soft on GoldenEye when you first saw it, or maybe that's something you've grown into over time. But seeing GoldenEye in the theater, which for some, like myself, GoldenEye was my first Bond movie, but not in the theater. But like it's my favorite, so it's like hallowed ground. But hearing you say in the past, and like I said, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you're like, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah, well, first off, I was waiting to see like just how many movies I was going to go see in the theater before you finally saw one in the theater, since I'm like how many years older than you. But
we still got a few more, so sorry.
There you go. I love GoldenEye for certain reasons, and there's other things about it. I find it to be one of the safest of the Bonds. You know, I mean, it's almost like it's so flawless that it's it's almost untouchable. And when I say untouchable, I mean that as a good and as a bad, meaning it's, you know, it's just, hey, you made a flawless Bond movie. I got nothing to complain about. But for some reason, I can't sort of get my arms around it. And, you know, it's like it sits on the on a pedestal, and it's great, and it hits all the right marks. And for some reason, I can't get my teeth into it. And I don't know why that is. But I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I it was a fantastic, Brosnan is a fantastic Bond. It was a great way to bring Bond back from the dead. And I, like so many others, stayed up for hours and hours and hours playing that video game. I mean, I can remember I can remember specifically the New Year's Eve after the game came out, when I had my cousins were over, and again, I would be 25 right about now. And I'm the oldest of my brothers and cousins, but we're all like in our early 20s. So probably like not old enough to go out and find a party, but we sure were perfectly happy staying home, drinking beer, and just playing GoldenEye all night long. I mean, we played until the sun came up practically. So yeah, I mean, again, phenomenal film again. And I feel like Pierce is such a good Bond, and I feel like he never got a primo script. You know, he never got a great script. He got a lot of good ones, but there was always something just a tiny bit, you know, something fell a tiny bit short with a lot of them.
You know,
and you could rip me a new one. Feel free.
I'm still stuck on
I know I'm in the minority.
Yeah.
Listen, I mean, we talked recently on our show when we discussed Skyfall, and Skyfall is fan favorite, and it just doesn't hit my frequency. And we had to like have a big heart to heart about it, because I didn't know why I didn't like Skyfall as much as I felt like I should, because it is so good and it is coveted and it has all these things in a Bond movie that I love. So why don't I, like, you know, love it?
I was gonna ask you guys, well, Joe specifically, because you know, as somebody who's kind of bouncing around from movie to movie, I can tell the difference and the contrast in the various eras and the films and everything, right off the cuff, obviously. But as somebody who grew up watching these films as they came out, was there any kind of transition from style to style? Or, like, was it how was it going into GoldenEye, seeing that movie, the style that it was compared to the rest?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big leap. It was definitely a leap forward. First off, GoldenEye felt like the beginning of a new era in so many ways. You know, Octopussy, View to a Kill, Living Daylights, and all those players are no longer around. You know, we don't have Moneypenny anymore. We don't have M. Q hangs around. He's one of the only remaining characters who stays the same. John Barry is not with us anymore. Daniel Kleinman is now taking over with the titles, who was spectacular, by the way. But again, it really was the end of an era. And GoldenEye very much gives you the vibe that this is a different Bond. In fact, I usually make the case that, you know, Casino Royale was, on paper, it was the first reboot. And I generally make the case, you know, even though they don't say it is, I feel that GoldenEye is very much a reboot. I feel like it's an unspoken reboot, because again, everything is fresh. It's all brand new. Even the idea of seeing the MI6 building in GoldenEye was totally new. I mean, usually up until then, you know, we see the little signs on the street, Universal Exports, you know, it's just some random building where they're hiding out. So yeah, this was a whole different vibe. And even the leap from GoldenEye to Tomorrow Never Dies was sort of a jump too, because GoldenEye to me was, it seemed to me that it was intentionally sort of a timeless film. There wasn't a lot of techie moments or overly techie moments that you would sort of point at and say, wow, I could tell you exactly what year that was. There was a lot of things that were very much traditional Bond. You know, you have tanks and trains and things like that that could have been 30 years ago. Tomorrow Never Dies is a wildly different animal, because they show up at this party. There's laser lights everywhere, bright colors. Everything is meant to be very much Bond in the present day. I think it's his first cell phone. It's his first, you know, first a lot of things. So yeah, that to me really did start to show and highlight, you know, this is a new era. This, you know, this is a new era of Bond. Not your granddaddy's James Bond. You know, we're doing things different.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could have been there to experience it in the big screen, in the theater with all these people. I saw it on the old VHS. I watched the old VHS, you know, GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, all the way to Casino Royale. That was my first one in the theater.
Really? Wow. Yeah. You guys are old enough to drink, right? Like you go out together.
He yeah. lived in the woods. It's not his fault.
This is true.
My first one that I was going to be allowed to, you know, go see, I was old enough to be, you know, taken to the theater to see, was Die Another Day. And I was a big James Bond fan at this point.
Yeah.
I started with GoldenEye. I think I probably saw it in like 96, 97. And I just consumed that in the video game and everything that came after that. And then Die Another Day is coming out, and I'm a huge James Bond fan at this point. So I was like begging, we have to go see this movie. And I remember the day we were going to go see it, and it was going to start at a particular time. I don't remember that exactly, but we went in the woods, and it was a very long journey to get to the theater. And I remember looking at the watch and being like, it's starting. Like, why haven't we left yet? I remember my dad saying like, yeah, we're not going to be able to go tonight. And I was, you know, I was 12 years old, and I was distraught. I remember just going in my room and just like silently crying, because I was so mad. I was so mad we didn't get to go see it. So when that movie did come out on DVD and VHS, actually got them both when it came out on VHS and DVD, I coveted that movie. I love it so much to this day, for all its faults and all. I love Die Another Day. But that's my first. Well, actually, that's not even my first. I was just maybe my worst.
Almost
in the theater. You know, didn't get it.
So close. And it's funny too, because that was, you know, I could totally see you getting into James Bond around that time too, because, I mean, that was honestly sort of the golden age of Bond in a lot of ways for me. First off, like, you know, I can remember. You know, Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough. This is sort of the, like, I'm in my mid to late 20s at this point. So if you ever remember, like, if you ever saw Fletch, that movie, there's a line in there where he says something like, well, I always take all my first dates to a Laker game. And I was at the era where it was like, well, I take all my dates to go see a James Bond movie. Like new James Bond movie comes out, I got to take a date and go see the new Bond movie. You know, but again, that era was phenomenal, because again, the Bond movies are still coming out on schedule every 2 years. We had the Benson novels in between throughout. They were coming out once a year. Again, the video games, GoldenEye was still far and away the best, but all the video game tie-ins were coming out pretty regularly. So yeah, I mean, there was just so much, if you're a fan, you know, there was just so much to sink your teeth into. So I think, by the time Die Another Day came out, I remember that was, I think, when I was really somewhere, like, during, it was during the Brosnan era where I really started to realize, like I'm not just a casual fan, like I'm a hardcore fan. And it was during this time where I was planning and saying to myself, like, I'm going to write a book. And, you know, it was a little bit later that I realized like what a podcast was, and decided, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'll do a podcast. And so, but this, again, this just sort of goes from sort of like how hardcore I was. In fact, my buddy Scott, who I did all the reviews with, I remember seeing Die Another Day opening night with him. And I think, and we met somebody else. There was somebody else who I met who had written a Bond book. So this is, I was really starting to get like really crazy in my kind of fandom. We all went together, and I remember like having martinis afterwards, and like just having a very non-Bond moment alongside my car before I went home. Somebody else was driving, thankfully. So, but yeah, no, this I was really getting hardcore, and I don't blame you again for kind of getting the bug around this time because it was a great time to be a fan.
Oh, certainly. You know, we're kind of getting into the Craig era, and that was my first one in the theater was Casino Royale. But I remember, you know, I was 15, 16 when it came out, and I was one of those guys. I was like, that's not James Bond. He's blonde and has long hair and he's ugly. That was my thought. So I was looking forward to seeing a new Bond film, but the transition from Pierce to Craig, I was not a big fan of. I, you know, was reading about how things went down in between, you know, Eon and Pierce and Eon and Daniel Craig, and just deciding to reboot. So I was a little sour on Casino, but then seeing it in the theater on the big screen, and it starts and it's black and white, and he pulls up that gun and blap, and it, you know, credit the titles begin. I can't remember a time I was more just like sucked in to something I wasn't expecting to love, and just being like, I'm here, I'm on board. And it definitely had to do with obviously the quality of the movie, but being in that big screen, I think, I mean, I didn't ask at the top, but you know, I'm assuming you're a movie theater guy in general, like enjoy going to see things on the big screen. There's really nothing like it.
I was gonna ask, is there a similar experience for you where you came into a Bond film kind of with like expectations, but it just blew you away?
Yeah, Casino Royale for
Oh, for real?
sure.
Okay.
Yeah, no, honestly, I that Casino Royale was probably to this day the one really purely just loved it movie from beginning to end. I feel like every Bond movie I had seen up until that point, and probably since, usually I'm watching it, love it, it's fun, everything's great. There's one or two things where I kind of was like, oh, I might have done that differently, or just like, oh, that was like, I didn't quite get it. That was a little confusing. I'll get it later, that kind of thing. But this one, I was just hooked the entire time. Like I remember seeing the trailers for it, and because and the funny thing about Casino Royale again is that, you know, you have to remember too is that Casino Royale was always that one film they didn't have the rights to for so long. And that was also the book that I'd read far and away the most of all the books, you know, because every time I would say, okay, that's it. This summer, I'm going to read every single book from beginning to end. And I'd get a couple in, but I would always start from the beginning. I would always start with Casino again. So that was the one that was like really committed to memory. So when I saw the trailer, you know, I always had a theory like throughout Brosnan, you know, if and looking back at some of like the 70s Bonds, you know, like Golden Gun, Moonraker, nothing like the novels, obviously. So my assumption with Casino Royale was that if they ever did it, you know, I'm sure there would be a card game in it, but the card game would then lead to the giant space laser or some, you know, world conquering thing that has to happen because we have to have like, you know, epic stakes. And so when I saw the trailer for Casino, I kind of perked up and went, ooh, I don't think that's what they're doing. This seems like a pretty interesting modern take on that story. And so I was already sort of, you know, almost to the point where I was telling myself, don't get overhyped, don't get too excited because you never know how this is going to go. But I was seeing a lot of green lights, like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing here. And even Craig, you know, I probably like a lot of people took one look at him and was like, oh, that's okay, that's a little different. And so I rented, you know, I was like, well, I gotta see something this guy's been in. Everyone was telling me he was in Tomb Raider. Didn't you see Tomb Raider? I'm like, yeah, but I don't remember him at all in that movie. Like, I don't remember anything about it. So I went and rented Layer Cake, and I was like, oh, okay. And I started to go, all right, now I see what they're doing. They're giving us kind of a tough guy, James Bond, who, you know, kind of going back to the Connery years and really kind of getting rough and raw again. So yeah, I was pretty open to it. And then when I saw it, it was pretty much exactly pretty much what I was hoping it would be. To the point where, you know, when he says the line in the theater in the movie, you know, the bitch is dead. And I was like, oh my God, they said the line for the thing. I mean, in the torture scene, I'm like, they'll never do that. But then all of a sudden, like, I see the chair getting the hole cut into it. I'm like, you have to be kidding me. They're really doing this. So, yeah, so I was sort of the perfect person to sort of do this for, meaning like, you know, again, I'm the guy who's I've read the books and you know, my James Bond was always sort of like a combination of like the, you know, the Bonds from the films and the Bond from the books. And so when I saw this, I was like, they hit a home run. I just thought they nailed it. And I still to this day think, you know, Casino Royale is by far, I think it's the best James Bond movie ever, just because they happen to they hit all the right notes. The planets aligned perfectly in so many different ways. So yeah, I mean that was my one there, right? I saw that movie six times in the theater. I think I tried to see it like a seventh, just to say I, you know, 007 times, but I saw it six times literally, and that was a good one too, because again, that was getting such good word of mouth that so many people that I knew, like coworkers, casual friends, you know, would come out of the woodwork and be like, "Hey, have you seen this new movie? I'm hearing it's great." I go, "Yeah, it's great. You want to go see it?" I'll go see it again with a new group of people. So yeah, I mean, I had so many, and honestly, every time I walked out of that theater, I swear, I was like, I was 6 inches taller. It was like just such a cool movie, and it just pumped you up so much, you know, like. It was, I mean, I, you know, it's such a good guy movie, you know, you felt
Yeah.
great. It was cool.
A gentleman's film, as
Yeah,
I
big
say.
time.
Yes,
You know,
absolutely.
you've attended premieres, you've seen these movies in theaters throughout the decades. What have been some like really special moments seeing them in the theater, whether it's, you know, I mean, we've been kind of sharing several of them throughout the night, but is there like a number one, something that really sticks out in your time seeing Bond in the movie theater?
Yes, I probably would go to when I saw Quantum in the theater, because that was an interesting time too, because in between Casino and Quantum was when I first met Dave Zaritsky and a couple other guys that were, I mean, honestly, that was my very first exposure to what today we commonly refer to as the Bond community. I mean, this was the first time I was really starting to make connections with people, you know, like-minded people, hardcore Bond fanatics. I think up until then, I knew of like an occasional, there was a like one or two Bond conventions. I think they would just call them spy conventions, where some of the actors were going to be. And I remember one time there was one that I was really trying to get to sometime in the late 90s, and I couldn't quite get there. So this was the first time things were starting to happen, and I was starting to get more engaged with some of, you know, going to the places that, you know, places where the hardcore fans are meeting up. So yeah, so I met Zaritsky not long after. I'll always remember that I met him between Casino and Quantum, because our very first connection was he wrote an article for Remmert's Bond Lifestyle site, and I remember reaching out to him saying, "Hey, I read your article. I thought it was great. You know, it was really cool." And he wrote back like, "Thanks," or something like, "Just let me go or whatever." But then we kept talking, found out that we lived not too far from each other. So one day he was having people over, and he had this huge collection already back then. So he's like, "You want to come by? I'm having people over. You want to come by?" I said, "Yeah." And then from then on, we were kind of fast friends. And then again, the group just grew and grew and grew. I remember sort of joking with him, because he had pictures from the US premiere of Casino Royale, which he went to. And I'm like, "How the hell did you get to go to the premiere?" And he says, "Well, it's funny, because he says, not only am I a big hardcore Bond fan, but, you know, I'm in pharma, and Johns Hopkins was the hospital down in Baltimore where Cubby Broccoli, he got sick, he went there. So they started doing all their premieres, their American premieres down in Baltimore, right outside Johns Hopkins." And so I was like, "Oh my goodness." So basically, by the time Quantum comes around, Now it's like, okay, how we, you know, I was able to go, and me and him and some other people that we knew went down for that premiere. So on opening night, and at that point, I think he was already kind of in the thick of things where he brought some of his collection down and they put it displayed it in the lobby or whatever. So yeah, that was already again starting to become cool. So, and ironically, every film since then has been me with like serious FOMO, because now everybody's moved on to going over to London for the premieres, and I'm always this close to getting there. But yeah, Quantum was the big one for me that I actually, you know, felt like, oh, this was, I didn't go to the premiere, but I went to the American premiere, so that's my highest ranking memory, I think.
What makes the American premiere, I guess, stand out? Like, what makes it different than, you know, just a midnight showing or the release night at your local?
Yeah, I mean, not a whole lot. I mean, honestly, it's not like any famous people are there. I mean, they kind of did it up right. Trying to remember, I remember they had some displays in the lobby. I mean, they did make a big deal out of it. They had like people were taking pictures out front, but it was certainly not at all what I see these days, you know, happening in London. London is like, that's the one. So yeah, there was no Daniel Craig or anybody standing there waving. It's in this one. It was, but again, it was just me and a couple of hardcore fans that were there.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Margo, I actually have a like a spin around question for you. Sorta, same boat, but jumping around. What was your favorite Bond movie theater memory?
I think it had to be Thunder. Okay, because I have three, period. I just have three experiences. There's No Time to Die, Thunderball at the Bond and Beyond, and Quantum of Solace at the Gather Small. So,
That was actually Gather All.
Gather All. The other one was a Gather Small.
Yeah.
Gather All. My bad. Whoops. And I okay, there's value to all of them. But I think, jeez. The one that I enjoyed myself the most at was at the Thunderball viewing, because it was the first time I was really aware of the fandom. I was aware of the people, and I was like, I was finally immersed into the community. But I think my favorite is No Time to Die, because it was a perfect example of the novice and the nostalgic going to the movie theater, but pre ever podcast existing or anything. Because when we were watching it, coming out of it, I was so jazzed. I loved it. I thought it was a great movie. I adored it. I thought, because I had no context prior to, you know, I think you showed me Casino Royale.
We watched the Craig
Did we watch all
movies.
the Craig movies? Okay, yeah. So we watched all the Craig movies. But I didn't have that like understanding of what Bond really is. I just knew the movies. So I was just digging it as a movie, and I was super excited to talk about it with him. And I was like, I bet he loved it. I bet he was all about it. I bet this was the perfect movie and the perfect ending. And I bet we're gonna have a great car ride home. Now, we still had a great car ride home, but we thoroughly disagreed on the quality of the movie.
Maybe not the quality of it,
Well,
but
you know, through the story
the
and
decisions,
the Rami
perhaps.
Malek and all that, or whatever his name is, you know, the reasons people in this community don't like this movie. That's what you were bringing up. You know, it was very similar to what a lot of people don't like.
I fell into that boat for
Yeah,
sure,
but this is obviously like just us coming out of the movie theater. I was like, this is great. And I loved the contrast there. And I think that's why that's my favorite movie experience with you. Also, there's a nice little cherry on top. Because there's another novice and nostalgic in the movie theater with us.
We
There's this,
don't know these people,
we
but
don't, but there was an older couple, and they were, you know, we were staying for the end credits because we wanted to make sure James Bond was coming back. And they were walking in front of us, and the husband's in the front, and the wife is right behind him, and she goes, "There, you saw it. You happy now?" And I was like, "Oh boy, that's a novice and nostalgic right there." Yeah, so there's that little bit, and I was like, because in my mind, I was like, we both liked this movie while she was saying that. Turns out we didn't, but that's okay.
I was like, if they if it doesn't say James Bond will return, I want my money back.
Yeah. Yeah, but even when you saw it, you were still kind of like, but well, what does that mean? Like that, like, I mean, it's like, it, like I did the same exact thing. I was waiting. And there it was, like, okay, there it is. And I felt for like half a second, I was like, oh, thank God. But then I was like, but then immediately after that, I was like, well, what does that mean? It means they're going to reboot the entire thing sometime. It just doesn't really, you know what I mean? Like they've put the exclamation point after this one. Margot, I am totally with you on that film because I sort of felt, and again, I'm in the minority, August will tell you. But, you know, I felt like I can compartmentalize and watch this in terms of just the Craig movies. You know what I mean? Like this to me is a punctuation mark that comes at the end of the Craig films. The Craig films were always a unique animal. I mean, you know what I mean? Like at no point, it was so funny because when they started out with Casino Royale, the potential was there to say, okay, this is, we're starting at the beginning of the Fleming novels and this character is going to follow Fleming going forward. But they didn't. As soon as Quantum came out, it was like, oh, okay, we're not doing that. We're just doing a whole different thing. You know, it's like Quantum was the new Spectre and that kind of thing. So it was always sort of a hodgepodge of like a little bit from Fleming, a little bit from the old movies, a little, and just to make its own thing. So I felt like you did. I felt like, yeah, that's a good way to punctuate the end of the Craig era. But yeah, I was, everyone else was like, no, that's still James Bond and we're not doing that.
I was so surprised because I was like, this was just a good movie. And I love the humanity of it too. Just the father figure. And I know a lot of people have their opinions about that, rightfully so. I don't think anyone's wrong in not enjoying that. You're allowed to feel, you know, if this man that you idolize, no, idolize is a stretch, but you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know if it is a stretch.
You like, I don't want to put it as like, yeah, I don't want to put anyone down by, you know, yeah, whatever. You know, you have this idea of a man and all of a sudden they're like, now he has kids. It changes the idea. It just, it for good or bad, doesn't matter. It changes it nonetheless. So I get why people aren't on board with that. I thought that was just beautiful. I thought it was a great way to end that. And then when the way they started the movie with the, we have all the time in the world, I was like, nice. And then, cause I got that, I was really proud of myself. And then there was the way they wrapped up the movie with them driving in the car. I thought that was just a really nice little bow tie. And it was very sweet. I really did enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And also that's a big part of why that's also my favorite movie memory is because I just independently really liked a Bond film. And that was, that's, and also just independently like a movie in general, that's a good feeling. While with like Thunderball, we had seen it prior. I wasn't super blown away by it or anything. I mean, I wasn't against it. I was like, yeah, it's a good movie, but I wasn't necessarily like enamored. But seeing it in a crowd of Bond fans, people enjoying it, people laughing at the moment before of all of us getting together, really like kind of just warming up an individual to see a Bond film, made me love this movie. It really made me love the whole movie experience. And it really kind of solidified the, or no, actually it was watching Quantum around a movie that I'm not a fan of. But walking out of the movie theater really happy and really like having enjoyed the movie really solidified for me that the best way to consume a Bond film is not just amongst friends, but on the big screen. Because it'll just completely change the way that you consume it. It'll completely change the way you interpret it. And it's that full body experience that you need. And that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it without it. It just like, it brings it to a new level. So each movie going experience with Bond for me compounds onto itself. There's always a new reason to enjoy it. No Time to Die for sure was the, that was the big one for me. Yeah.
So let me tell you, honestly, you're hitting the nail on the head on so many different things because the seeing a Bond film in the theater, it really is, it's just magical for so many of the reasons that you said. First off, it's like, you know, I remember when, you know, again, talking about like the golden age of Bond when the movies were first coming out on DVD and they looked great, everything was good, and they had all these extras, these documentaries, that was so much fun. They came out little by little, so you collected them all little by little, then the Blu-rays and everything, and you'd just sit there and go, oh, they look great. But honestly, It's sort of amazing to me that over the years, like anytime there's a re-release of one of the films, you know, one of the theaters is playing the old films and they do a Bond film. I'm there every single time. And every time I see one, I really do get a whole new appreciation for the film. First off, it's a totally different experience. Your phone is not chirping, you know, you're not distracted by things at home. You're sitting in the seat, you're just glued to that screen for 2 hours straight. That's the right way to see it from beginning to end. You appreciate the story again. There's so many of the Bond films, like I'll pop them in for 20 minutes and then I'm distracted by something else, or it's on TV, so I let it play while I'm doing things. But just to sit there and be able to focus for 2 hours is so, that's the right way to do it. And you know, I've seen, like, I remember I saw Honor Majesty's Secret Service, and the first time I saw that on the big screen, and it was, you know, sometimes these days theaters will show, they'll just show the Blu-ray too. But if you get like an actual print, like an actual print of the film, and you see an actual film presentation, like I remember just the first time I saw the opening fight scene in the ocean on Honor Majesty's, I remember watching just the reflection off the water. That brightness that you can only get from seeing it on the big screen, like the sparkling off the water, it was like, wow, that, I mean, it was like you really felt like you were there. Films like you just said, Thunderball. I love seeing Thunderball on the big screen because, you know, those underwater scenes that I think, you know, when you see them at home, people say, oh, it's too slow. But when you see it on the screen and you feel like you're underwater with them, that's a whole different vibe. Even, you know, I saw, You Only Live Twice on the big screen. And I used to always give that film a hard time because that one for me was like the first one of the Connerys that felt a little too silly and comic bookish. You know, the first four to me were like a little more grounded. But honestly, when I saw like the big volcano lair with the ninjas coming down, when I saw that on the big screen, I was like, okay, now I get it. Like that was cool. You know, that was a really cool scene to see done on the big screen the way it belongs. So yeah, I mean it really is, the experience of it is just so much better on the big screen, and it's so worth it if you ever get a chance to see it that way.
Big time. No, I completely agree. And it's cool because as someone who's not has does didn't like naturally fall in love with James Bond, you know, I'm still in that process, but I really didn't get it. And it's experiencing it that really just puts everything into context. And also just because it's not like I was watching a PowerPoint presentation on why Bond is great. You know, it was just being around people who appreciate it. And it's not like we were talking about Bond the entire time. We're just talking about our regular lives. It was the excitement. And another quote Bond memory I have, that's not really a Bond movie memory, but it is. My friends dragged me to go to see the Twilight movie. And one of the Twilight, I don't remember which one. And the one that came out right when Quantum came out.
Twilight.
Twilight. Okay, well, there you go.
Okay.
There's your answer. One of our friends, he couldn't get a ticket because it was completely sold out, so he bought a Quantum of Solace ticket, and we snuck him in to the movie theater, which wasn't difficult because it was just a horde of teenagers. They weren't checking tickets. They were just like, go find a seat, sit on the floor, who cares? Terrible movie. Or not terrible movie. I don't want to knock it for anyone who likes it, but not my taste. Everyone was screaming and yelling, and I didn't like it. But in that moment, there was that exhilaration. There was the being part of a crowd and being part of the moment before that made me appreciate the movie while we were watching it. Now, afterwards, I was like, oh, actually, that was a bad movie. But I didn't have that moment after with the Bond film. I had the exhilaration of the crowd. I had the exhilaration of watching the movie and walking out of it. I was like, oh, that was really fun. That was really nice. And then I had things to say about the movie. I actually had an opinion. There's also something about being in a movie theater. You have to pay attention. You can't go on your phone. You can't, and if you do, you're a loser, because that's how I feel about it. It's important. You're just sitting there. You got nothing to do but watch the movie and enjoy it, which is wonderful. That's what movies are for. And I feel like the Bond experience overall, not David, but you know, just the experience of watching a Bond film, has just been so dialed up and so like saturated with pleasure ever since we've been going to the movies and going to these events and, you know, being part of that. And what's nice about being in the movie theaters for even like, even if it's not a Bond event or whatever, you're part of something in that moment. You're in a crowd of people enjoying the same thing. And that camaraderie if everyone's being quiet and respectful is really, really important. It's really, it's something that just adds to the experience the moment before, the moment during, and the moment after. And that's what No Time to Die was for me, for sure. And Thunderball and Quantum of Solace. Now, I've only seen three, but I'm excited to see what else there is out there. And, you know, when the new ones come out, I hope they do get a theater release and not just, you know,
right
streaming.
To streaming.
You know, because that would just be, that's the new made-for-TV movie version or whatever. But, you know, I do hope we get to see it in the movie theater, which,
oh,
you know.
Yeah, we will. We will.
We definitely will.
As we're wrapping up here, Joe, I have a question that's going to be not a rough one, but you'll see what I mean in a minute, and then there'll be a little palate cleanser. But we're talking about favorite movie memories. Do you have a worst movie theater memory, seeing a Bond film in the theater?
That's a good question. Not that I can remember. I know that. I remember seeing Quantum three times, thinking that I sat too close to the screen. So that was probably the reason why I saw it as many times as I did. The opening just kind of like, what the heck is going on? I think between that and mounting my car up on the divider might be my only two kind of negative-ish memories. But I think the rest of it pretty positive.
Margo, do you have a worst Bond theater memory? I know you've only had three.
No, honestly, they've all been great. I got plenty of bad movie theater memories.
Of course, but not with James Bond.
Not with James Bond. No, they've been flawless every single time. and I don't know if it's because of the... Well, I know why with Thunderball and Quantum and all that, because it was an event. And even if people did talk, I really didn't mind it. I knew it came with the territory. No Time to Die 2. It was right after COVID, so they were still doing the social distancing. So we had free seats all around us, which means if people were talking, we couldn't hear them. But I don't know if that's just like maybe a Bond thing. Like people should go to see the movie and enjoy it. You know, that's not, it's not like other movies where someone's trying to guess the plot or telling them about their auntie's cat right next to us. You know, like it's, it feels like people are there to watch the movie. But I don't know. What about you, August? Do you have a terrible movie theater memory?
Yes.
I have
two. One's a more a me problem, but you know, No Time to Die. I do like that movie. It's just that ending that leaves me sour. But you know, I saw it three times in the theater, so I must have liked it, right? First time I saw it, that ending happens, and I was kind of in disbelief. Like I was like, you know, I was expecting something to happen. You know, he didn't really die, what have you. But we don't get that. The second time I saw it, you know, when he does that final ascent and he's climbing that ladder and like, I'm not going to make it this time. I was a mess. I was crying and it hit me hard. Then the third time I saw it, that scene happened. I was like, you know what? I'm just mad. I'm so mad. I got so angry that I didn't cry. I was just pissed off. And now it's to the point where if I watch No Time to Die, I usually just, I'm like, the movie's over right before the ending happens. But so that's more of a me problem, just being so angry in the theater, seeing No Time to Die.
Have you rewatched it since?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just wondering.
And I always skip the end. No, that's not true. No, you and I watched it not too long ago.
Really?
Jeez,
I don't remember. Sorry.
Okay. the actual worst theater memory I have is seeing Spectre. I saw it a few times also, and this also was the third time I saw it. I was seeing somebody at the time, and I don't know why we were watching this movie, and I could just see out of my peripheral they were just turned and staring at me, and every time I would look over to see like, what are you looking at, they would like turn their head back to the screen real quick, and then I'd see it out of my peripheral. They're turning and looking at me again. I look back and they turn. And after like 40 minutes of that, I was like, are you okay? Like, is there something wrong? She's like, what? Like, you keep looking at me. No, I'm not. Like, yes, you are. And then I caught her doing it again. I was like, see? And then she's like, oh. And it just kept happening for 2.5 hours. We broke up shortly after.
I have met this person. and her eyeballs are also out to here. So like, it's pretty obvious if this girl's like staring at you, and yeah, it's just terrifying just the thought of that. So it
made for a very sour theater experience for sure. but with that being said, you know, we've talked about seeing new Bond films on the big screen, re-releases, things like that. At where we're sitting right now, at the time of this recording, there's a few old school Bonds getting shown on the big screen that we're all going to get to see. And then hopefully in 2028, as we're being promised, we're going to be getting Bond 26. What are your hopes, anticipations, thoughts, feelings on revisiting James Bond in the big screen? On the big screen, not in it.
That's a great question, because I feel like we're sort of talk about in flux. Like, we don't know what's coming down the pike just yet. I don't really have a lot of preconceived ideas about what I really want to see. I think I'm just hoping that they do it right and doing, you know, give Bond his due. Meaning, the only thing I really hope to see is that the filmmakers, the writers, really understand Fleming, because I think that, you know, the wrong filmmakers tend to just look at James Bond as just another action hero who needs at least one obligatory scene in a tuxedo with a martini. You know, and the ones who get it right understand Fleming. I think it's probably no secret or no coincidence that my favorite Fleming or my favorite Bond films tend to be the ones that feel like the book, Casino Royale, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, Thunderball, these films. They have that Bond vibe. And I think like certain films like Living Daylights, they touch on it, you know. Octopussy for sure. I think, you know, interestingly, Octopussy is loosely based on two of the short stories, and the rest of it is sort of done. But I think they managed to sort of capture what Fleming is all about. I mean, again, am I ever going to see another film where James Bond is having a conversation with the father of the girl he's shtupping, who also happens to be a mafia boss who's begging him to see her some more? Probably not. You know, it's probably like a once in a lifetime thing. That's, you know, but again, I think the more they can really pay homage to Fleming and really understand what makes James Bond unique, the better project we'll end up with. So that's kind of the only thing I'm hoping for. Otherwise, I don't really have any specifics. People ask me all the time, who do you want to see as the new James Bond? And I go, I don't watch enough current TV, and you know, I don't know who the new players are to really sit there and say, oh, I want this guy or that guy. So I just hope they get it right. I'm curious to see what they do in response to the game, because I hear a lot of murmurings like people are just loving the game, which I can understand. But again, I'm a little old school. So when I hear people say like, oh, maybe this young kid should be the new James Bond, I'm like, well, I don't know about that. I can see why they would like that. And I'm open to things. Again, he's kind of the rough young James Bond who's going to mature into more of the Bond that we know. Okay, I get it. So possibly. But yeah, other than that, I'm more or less open to whatever happens, I think.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm in that boat of excitement with First Light, being like, they need to make this into the next movie. But
okay, yeah.
I've said that, but realistically, I'm just excited, and I do love that game so much. It should stay in that, like, in the world of the video game, right? The movie needs to be its own thing, just like the video game's its own thing.
I also feel like the people who have made this video game have put the people who are going to be making the film at a huge advantage, because now they have a point of reference for what do modern fans and nostalgic fans, I guess, what draws them in? What do they like? There's a formula right there. Now, the copy paste ain't going to be really a ripoff is not going to get them very far, but like there's a formula right there. There's all the things that you could translate and modernize. Mm-hmm. It's all there. Yeah. And again, I'm not playing the game. I'm watching him play the game, which is very fun. It's like watching a movie, except the Bond keeps dying and then coming back. So that's cool. Right.
That's a user problem there. But yeah, yeah. It's a good blueprint for the modern, but so is Fleming. Fleming mm-hmm. will always work as a blueprint for sure for modern audiences and so on. But, you know, seeing Bond on the big screen, you touched on, like, You Only Live Twice in the big volcano lair, and yeah. even saying A View to a Kill would have been cool to see with the blimp. Like, how would that translate mm-hmm. on that massive screen? My first IMAX screening was Skyfall, and it can never be replicated, right? That's yeah. the kind of thing I'm hoping for in the future. And just seeing, like, Moonraker's coming up. We're going to see Moonraker on the big screen, or Casino Royale later this year. It's seeing these movies that we love or hope to love in that setting and seeing these details in a way you can never experience anywhere else. Those yeah. are my hopes and dreams and anticipations.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad you touched on it, because I was not going to let you guys go without asking, am I going to be seeing you at the Moonraker screening? Because speaking of movies that I tend to give a hard time to, that I think seeing it on the big screen would probably be a wildly different experience, this falls into that category. So I'm very happy I'll be seeing you guys in about 2 months.
Yeah.
Exactly 2 months from today, actually, from the time of this recording.
Nice.
We're excited to touch base with you and hang out and talk. And actually, yeah. we actually decided this last night, but it's going to be Margot's first ever viewing of Moonraker mm-hmm. is going to be at the big, okay. big screen.
Yeah, very excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just keep doing yeah. that. Whenever a movie I haven't seen yet is going to be screened, let's just save it, because, mm-hmm. you know, it'll be more fun. I'm excited.
It'll be really interesting to see what your reaction is. So I hope you guys do like a review afterwards.
Oh, big time. Yeah. I have a feeling I'm really going to like it. I don't know. There's something about it that I'm like very drawn to. And I have no expectations. We were just talking to somebody about this, but I can kind of guess, if you present a Bond movie to me, I could kind of guess what the plot's going to be. Moonraker, mm-hmm. I have no clue. I have no idea. Space? Like, I don't know. It's just like, I can't like, oh, maybe this and that. No, I have no clue. I have no idea what it's about. And I kind of like that. So I have zero expectations.
Yeah. You know, we're excited to do that. We're excited to see you there,
yeah.
and we will talk and drink and eat and have a good time.
That's right. Watch movies.
Absolutely.
But we were even more excited that you took the time to squeeze us into your evening,
yeah.
and came on the show and talked some 007 movie theater memories.
Yeah. Thanks. No, this was fun. Honestly, you're very welcome. Thank you. Honestly, because you really, I'm not kidding when I say that you guys had me conjuring up memories that I hadn't even thought of myself in a while. So yeah, I knew what we were going to talk about today, but I didn't, you know, I didn't go like, oh good, that'll be fun. I didn't sit there and stop and go back and start thinking about all these things, but it wasn't until we started talking that I was like remembering all of these different mm-hmm. memories. I was like, yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you guys. It was great. Oh,
that's awesome. Thank you so much. This is absolutely wonderful. I think this is just like the perfect topic for you to, you know, for us to have for you, Margo. No, thank you so much for sharing your memories and for, you know, revealing the big controversy with A View to a Kill.
Yes.
I'll never let you live that down. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. And as a thank you, with your blessing, I like to make cocktails. I like to make cocktails as a thank you gift for our guests. So with your blessing, could I make the Being James Bond cocktail?
Yes, you can. I'm calling me curious now.
You can also say no. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're like, no, I already have one.
Yeah. It's called
Bring it on.
Martini.
It's Mountain Dew and tequila. All right. That's it.
So. Now I've been drinking it tonight. So I was testing it out, and I think we have a winner.
Cool.
So
yeah, we'll be releasing a video about it and all that fun stuff. So
all that fun
yeah.
stuff.
Oh, okay. All right, well, cool. You. All right.
Cool.
Thank you.
Well, hey, Joe, thank you. Where can the listeners find you? They already know where they can find you, but from your lips, where can they find you?
You can find me anywhere you get your podcasts. I think Apple, Spotify, all of them. I think they're all on every one. Yeah, and I have to kind of dust off the microphone a little bit because it's been a little while. So, which is extra fun that you guys brought me on because again, when I'm too busy just to record my own stuff, I'm always happy to jump on somebody else's for a little while. So again, thank you again. But yeah, Being James Bond podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, it's on YouTube as well. And check out Being James Bond Volume 1, Second Edition, as along with Being James Bond Volume 2 at Amazon. Also available as an audiobook if you do Audible or whatever else. So, guys, thank you for letting me do a shout out.
Of course.
Absolutely. We'll put all those links in the notes below.
Sweet.
Margo, where can the people find us?
Instagram and only Instagram at A Good Squeeze, where August posts life updates, episode updates, little sneak peeks of how we squeeze a little bit of James Bond into our everyday lives.
And like Joe, you can hear our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Yeah, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Audio Boom if you like to listen on the old URL. But yeah, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there.
And on that note, I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And I'm Joe.
And this has been
good squeeze.
One last screw.
That's exactly what I was.
That's
Yeah,
perfect.
that's good.
Oh,
That's good.
thank you so
Thank you.
much.